Okay, good evening everyone, welcome back.
Good evening.
Hope you all had a nice Chag B'Omer. So, if you recall last week, we talked about the Torah's perspective of vegetarianism. We gave one approach, one main approach of Cook, of Soloveitchik. Today we want to move on to the actual halachot. The first two shiurim have been more the understanding of the mitzvah of kashrut. The first one was all about the reasons for kashrut last week by vegetarianism. And today we're going to move on to the actual halachot. And it's very timely, being that we are a week and a half away from Shavuot, in which we have the minhag of eating milk, and the type of questions we'll discuss today come up very often. This is the time when they come on Shavuot, because on Shavuot you have, on the one hand, the mitzvah of eating meat, because like it's every chag, there's a mitzvah of eating meat. But it's also, we have the minhagim of having dairy food. And so quite often you have this conflict, what's going on, you know, what can you do, what can you not do. And therefore that's what we're going to try to do this evening, is go through the basic halachot, which many of us may know them, but sometimes we need a refresher, sometimes a reminder, and to discuss some interesting questions which arise in these scenarios. So the first thing we need to do, as usual, is always try to understand the reason. So if you have your handouts, on the handouts you have the brief points as I'm going through. So we discussed this in the first shiur, but again, very briefly, what's the reason why the Torah prohibits specifically eating meat and milk together? They are two foods which are equally permitted. You can have meat by itself as long as it's kasher. You can have dairy by itself, again, as long as it's kasher, it's come from a kosher animal. So why does the Torah prohibit to have meat and milk together? So we have four reasons for this. It's the Sefer HaChinuch, 14th century Barcelona. For him, the reason is that it's a mixture of two disparate forces. He compares it to sha'atnez, wool and linen, two different forces not to be combined. We also said another example is kil'ayim, not meant to mix two fruits, not meant to graft two fruits together. That was one reason given. Similarly, he sees the mixing meat and milk as two separate forces which shouldn't be mixed together. The second reason is the Ramban, Nachmanides. The Ramban says it's cruel. He says that the pasuk says lo tevashel gedi b'halev imo, do not cook a kid in its mother's milk, and to because that's cruel. And he says every animal you can consider it a mother because it has the ability to be a parent, and every child, every kid can be considered, every animal can be also considered the young, and therefore, although the Torah talks about not cooking a kid in its mother's milk, we extend that to all meat and milk, and the primary reason being the cruelty, and specifically a kid in its mother's milk. Therefore, it became prohibited for all animals, all meat and milk together. A third reason is the Rashbam. Rashbam says, again, we mentioned this in the first lecture, but very briefly, the Rashbam says the reason is, this is Rashbam, is Rashi's grandson. So he was 13th century. He says that the reason is, it's because it's gluttonous. So it's gluttonous to have meat with an animal's meat with the same substance which gave it nutrition. What gave this animal its life? It's the milk from its mother. To mix those two together, it's a gluttonous act, and although we're allowed to have them separately, but to mix them together, that's already beyond the boundaries. Finally, the Rambam. The Rambam gives two reasons. One reason, he says, is because it's unwholesome, it's unhealthy. The two foods which shouldn't be mixed together, and it's not healthy for the body. But the second reason, which he prefers, and he says, this is my preferred reason, although he says, I'm not sure about it, nonetheless, I still prefer this answer. He says, because this was a pagan practice, this was what the idolaters did, and therefore, in order to wean us away from idolatrous practice, Torah forbade us from mixing meat and milk together. And as we've said, the Rambam sees many mitzvot in the Torah. Many mitzvot in the Torah. The mitzvot of tattoos, the mitzvot of not rounding off the corners of the head, the mitzvot of not using a razor to shave one's beard, so on and so forth. The Rambam sees all of these rooted in pagan practices, in idolatrous practices, and the Torah trying to wean us away and bringing us to the monotheistic, to the Hod Hashem, to the unity of God, to the one belief in God who is all-powerful, all-incumbent, and the source of all. Okay, that's Just a brief introduction and summarizing one point which we discussed in the first shiur. So let's get into the halachot now. So the starting point has to be the Torah. We always look towards the Torah and understand something. The Torah says in three places the exact same words, the exact same five words. It's found in Parashat Mishpatim, Parashat Ki Tisa, and Parashat Re'eh. The Torah says three times, Lo tevashel gedi b'halev imo. Do not cook a kid in its mother's milk. Okay? Do not cook a kid in its mother's milk. And so, why is it written three times? From this, the Hachamim Lana, the Torah, there are three separate biblical prohibitions. This is the source for everything. Three separate biblical prohibitions concerning meat and milk together. Number one is, do not eat meat and milk together. Number two is, do not cook meat and milk together, although you have no intention in eating it. Number three is, even if meat and milk has been cooked by someone else, and you're not eating it, do not have benefits from it. I.e., you cannot sell it. You cannot buy and sell it. You cannot have any benefit from it. You can't even feed it to your animals, right? And this is a biblical prohibition. The same prohibition of eating meat and milk, which we would never consider of doing, right? It's the same thing. Buying and selling this type of food, or even just cooking it. And we're going to talk about this in greater detail. But therefore, it's important to remember that there are three separate prohibitions, and each one are from the Torah, which is why the Torah in three places says, Lo tevasher gedi b'halev imo, do not cook the kid in its mother's milk. Now, it's always important to understand what's forbidden by the Torah, by God Himself, and what's forbidden by the Chachamim. For two reasons. On a theoretical plane, always you have to know, well, the Torah prohibited or the Chachamim prohibited. Okay? The Rambam says, in one place, that a person who teaches publicly that something forbidden by the Chachamim is forbidden by the Torah, he transgresses a negative prohibition. What's a negative prohibition? Don't add to the Torah. He says, the only right the Chachamim had, the only right the sages had to add all these extra mitzvot and all these rabbinic prohibitions that we have, their only right was because they made it clear this is rabbinic. If anyone tries to add something and say you can't do this, say because the Torah said you can't do it, that's a prohibition, one of the 630 commandments, do not add to what the Torah said. That was the mistake of Adam, right? Adam and Chava, that was the mistake. When Chava told Adam you mustn't touch, when really you only know how to eat. So that's always why it's important to know the difference between Doraita and Rabbanan, biblical and rabbinic. But here specifically, there's a very important reason why we need to know what's forbidden by the Torah, what's forbidden by the Chachamim. That's because even things which a person isn't allowed to eat from a rabbinic perspective, one is allowed to cook or to have benefits from. So, you may not know this, but to eat a deer, deer's meat with milk, from the Torah's perspective, is fine. No problem at all. Why? Because the Torah talked about not cooking an animal. A gedi is a domesticated animal. Poultry, or wild animals, even if it's kosher, from the Torah's point of view, is fine to cook with milk. No problem, you can cook it and you can eat it together. Torah only prohibited domesticated animals with dairy. But Hachamim said, don't eat it. Fine. What difference does it make to me? I can't eat it. Who cares whether it's forbidden by the Torah or by the Hachamim? Answer is, you can cook it. You can have benefit from it. You can sell it. One is allowed to sell and cook meat of a deer or chicken with dairy. No problem at all. Because although the Hachamim prohibited various things, they only prohibited it to eat, not to have benefit from, and not to cook. And therefore, chicken with milk. Again, chicken. People know it's forbidden. We don't have chicken with milk, with dairy. Of course not. But it's only prohibited from the Hachamim to cook. But to eat. You're right, to eat. But to cook it, or to have benefit from it, one is allowed to, because it's only forbidden by the Hachamim.
Chicken and milk in the same pot?
One is One is strictly speaking allowed to. Marit Ayin says better not to, but strictly speaking one's allowed to. Alright? I know this sounds but strictly speaking, because the Torah only prohibited meat and not, The problem will be why you can't cook in a pot, will because the pot you're going to have the taste coming out. But the actual act of cooking is nothing wrong. If it's someone else's utensils, no problem at all. The problem is the eating, and that can get absorbed in the walls. But the actual act of cooking, no problem at all. So that's why it's so important always to know what's forbidden from the Torah of Hachamim, especially in this context when it comes to Basar B'Halav. So let's talk about each of these three points. Firstly, cooking. So cooking, we said, is forbidden regardless if it's eaten or not. One's not allowed to cook meat, as in domesticated meat, together with dairy. Even if one doesn't cook it, one has no benefit from it. Now what does cooking mean? What does cooking mean? Okay, what's the definition of cooking? So, all forms of cooking, whether it's boiling, frying, barbecuing, these are all forms of cooking which are prohibited to be cooked with dairy, even if one doesn't have intention to eat it. What about smoking something? Smoking meat and milk together, or salting them together? There's a big discussion about this. And the final conclusion with this is it's only forbidden from the Hachamim. Everything which has got to do with fire, like boiling, barbecuing, roasting, that's all forbidden from the Torah to cook together. But salting and smoking, that's forbidden from the Hachamim. Very interesting question which is discussed in the last 40-50 years, microwaves. Okay, what's the status of a microwave with regards to cooking meat and milk in it? Can you have one microwave for meat and milk? If you can't, is it forbidden from the Torah, is it forbidden from the Hachamim? What's the status of it? So as you can imagine, when it came out, microwaves, was a huge discussion. And basically you have the main two camps of the Moshe Feinstein against Hacham Ovadia Yosef. So in order to understand this, let's talk about something which we discussed once in Shabbat, in the Shabbat series. So when it comes to cooking in the sun, we said very clearly then, even though one's allowed to cook on the fire on Shabbat, one is allowed to cook in the sun. That's everyone knows. One can take an egg out to the sun in your hand and cook it, no problem at all. What's the reason that you're allowed to do so? So there are two reasons given. One reason given, this is in the Rishonim, one reason given is that it's not the norm to cook in the sun. The norm is to cook on the fire. Because it's not the norm to cook on the sun, it wasn't prohibited. That's one reason. Second reason given is that the definition of cooking is to cook by fire. When you cook something without fire, that's not called cooking. What's the difference between these two reasons? Microwave. If the reason is that cooking means, the reason why you can't cook in the sun is because, the reason why you can cook in the sun is because it's not the normal way of cooking, and therefore it's not considered the prohibited act of cooking on Shabbat, so too with the microwave. Today, it's the normal way of cooking. That's how people cook things today. And therefore, says Rav Moshe Feinstein, today, if one mixes meat and milk in a microwave and cooks things together, that's forbidden by the Torah. And therefore, what we said earlier on, if something's forbidden by the Torah, you can't have benefits from it. You can't feed it to your dog. Chacham Avadia wants to take on the second reason. The reason is because that this isn't the definition of cooking. Cooking means to cook with fire. When you don't have fire, that's not called an act of cooking. Microwave is using radiation, it's not using fire, and therefore there's no problem. He brings a proof from, he discusses the springs of Tveria. So the Mishnah in Hulin talks about one who cooks meat and milk by the springs of Tveria. What are the springs of Tveria? It's not fire, but it's hot. So there the Hachamim say it's forbidden midrabanan. From the Torah they say it's fine. So he wants to say, perhaps the microwave is like the springs of Tveria. But he says, even that's not comparable. Because the springs of Tveria, at least, they're hot. True, it's not fire, in the sense it's not, the heat isn't coming from fire. Right? They didn't view it as fire, at least. Okay, like the sun is not considered, the sun's also fire, if you think about it. It wasn't viewed as fire. I understand the point. Yeah? But there's a transfusion of heat. Right, but here the microwave there isn't. And therefore, Chacham Avadia's conclusion is that at worst, a microwave, this is how he takes on, a microwave is only asur midrabanan. Only asur midrabanan. That's how we take on. Which is why we have various stringencies. And as we've said, if something has been cooked,
in the microwave forbidden, then one may benefit from it, or may feed it to others, or may give it to, and so on. Whereas if something is forbidden from the Torah, then as we've said, one cannot have any benefits from it. So that's an important point with regards to microwaves. A couple more points with regards to cooking. Washing tablecloths together, meaty and milky tablecloths, which have meat and milk on them. One meaty tablecloth full of meat, one milky tablecloth full of cheese. Would you allow to do that?
No.
The Poskim discussed this. And they said no problem at all for various reasons. Number one, it's not the way of cooking. Number two, it's very likely it's going to be 60 times water against any remnants. Thirdly, is that because of the cleaning agents, makes it all not edible for food. And it's not the way of cooking, so on and so forth. Many reasons are given why there's no problem, and therefore one doesn't have to worry. One can, even if it's heavily stained, a thick, meaty stain with a cheese stain, you can mix them together, wash them in the washing machine, no problem at all. One final point, this is an important point, one has an au pair at home. So we're going to talk about, in the next shiur after Shavuot, we're going to talk about a non-Jewish au pair cooking for you. What about the other way around? Your au pair asks you to switch on the stove or something like that. Now you have to make sure, the halakha says you have to check, if they have their own pot, you have to check what they have in it. Because if they've cooked something which is forbidden, if they have something there ready to be cooked which is forbidden for you to mix together, then you can't ignite the stove, you can't cook that, because you're going to be considered cooking meat and milk together, and therefore that's an important one. When everyone cooks for non-Jews, one has to verify that he's not cooking meat and dairy. As we said at the beginning, one may cook chicken and dairy, one may cook deer and dairy, wild animals and dairy, but domesticated meat with dairy is forbidden by the Torah, and therefore one cannot cook that. On a side point, we're going to go into that now, just so you should know the extent of how forbidden this is that even when it comes to cooking pork, hazir for non-Jews is a big discussion, and the final halakha is, if one needs to, one can't find another job, one needs the money, one is allowed to act as a non-Jew, as a chef for non-Jewish food, and cook non-kosher food. What he cannot do, though, is you cannot cook meat and milk together, because that's forbidden by the Torah. There's absolutely no way around that. But I'm just going to show you, for bringing out the gravity of this. Even when it comes to cooking hazir, if there's a need to, one hasn't got parnasah, that's a person's job, he's a chef, that's all he can find, one's allowed to. Right? Of course, he has to be careful, there's a need, obviously. But this, meat and milk together, how careful one has to be not to cook them together. To summarize what we've discussed about cooking, firstly we talked about the reasons why meat and milk together, then we discussed the Rishonim, the reasons why it's prohibited, then we explained the importance of knowing what's forbidden by the Hachayim, what's forbidden by the Torah. We also explained that what the definition of cooking is. We talked about microwaves, we said washing tablecloths fine together, non-Jew in the house, one has to be careful. And finally, a Jewish chef who works for a non-Jewish company must make sure no meat or milk is cooked together. Okay. Yes, there's a question there?
I think it was just that you can cook them at separate times in the same microwave. Just
you well, you have to kasher. We'll talk about it at the end, how you kasher. Mechila. Okay. Yeah, it's Philip. Okay. Fine, moving on. Benefits, this is a small point, as we said, you can't have any benefits from meat and dairy cooked together, and this is taken very far. That means you can't even feed it to your pets. Even a stray dog, there's a discussion in the Poskim about it, and the conclusion is, better not to, because that may be considered you getting benefit, that you're feeding good, that you fed it, right? Okay, it's a bit, yeah? But the point is, how far this is taken, you can't even burn it further. You want to get rid of it, you want to burn it further. Why not? But that'd be considered the further cooking. Right? So if you can't even burn it together, and the ashes, even, you can't have benefits from it. They're just trying to show you how far this is taken. Of course, this is extreme, but the point is how careful you have to be not to cook, and if it's cooked, you can't have any benefit from it. Again, only when a negative prohibition has been transgressed. Okay, now I want to focus on, for the main part, is eating, and then kashering various types of utensils. So, eating. The Torah as we said, says in three places not to cook meat and dairy together. Now, when the Torah talks about these three prohibitions, it says each time, lo tevashel gedi. Lo tevashel gedi means do not cook. Why, if one is coming to tell you the prohibition of cooking, one the prohibition of eating, one the prohibition of benefiting, does he use the word cooking? So this is how Chachamim explain, that even though one is not allowed to cook, or to benefit, or to eat, one is only not allowed to eat meat and dairy which were cooked together. Meat and dairy which were mixed together and were not cooked together, from the Torah's perspective, is fine to eat. So you have cold piece of meat cooked by itself, piece of cheese on the same plate, in the same mouthful, from the Torah's perspective, you haven't done anything wrong. Yeah? You hear this? Nothing wrong. Because the Torah only permitted you to eat meat and dairy which was cooked together, not which was just mixed together. Which is why, if you have this, cold meat with cold cheese mixed together, okay, you can't eat it, achamim, but you can do what you want with it, give it to others, no problem at all. So, achamim prohibited us to eat meat and dairy, even if they weren't cooked together. That's a rabbinic enactment. Fine. Achamim weren't satisfied with that, and they took it even further. They said, it's important to understand the levels here. Not only are we going to say that you can't have in the same mouthful meat and dairy, but we're going to go further now. We're going to say that once you've eaten meat, you can't have till the next seudah, you can't have till the next meal, dairy. So that means, we'll talk about what that means. That means the prohibition of not eating milk, drinking milk, not eating dairy after meat, 1 hour, 3 hours, 6 hours, which we'll talk about briefly, whatever it is, that is twice removed from a biblical prohibition, if you think about it. Because from the Torah's perspective, only if they cook together is it forbidden. Here they haven't been cooked together. They're being eaten separately. So that's already rabbinic. Not only that, they're not being eaten in the same mouth. They're being eaten in a time gap between them. So it's twice removed. Furthermore, if you just ate chicken, waiting 6 hours or 3 hours after to eat dairy after chicken is three times removed from a biblical prohibition. Why? Because as we said before, poultry, fowl with dairy is only forbidden from the Chachamim. So you're not eating, it hasn't been cooked together. You're eating it this time distance, half an hour instead of 6 hours, and it's chicken. That's going to be three times removed from the Chachamim. From the Torah, only three times forbidden by the Chachamim. And it's remarkable how people are so particular about this. You know, people are not necessarily observant of Shabbat. When it comes to this, they're very observant. And it's interesting. It's interesting how this is something which is, you know, so far removed from a Torah perspective. Nonetheless, it's something which is really well kept, even if people are on that observant. Yeah.
So why can't you reverse your it? You have Haravi first. Why should you not wait 6 hours before you can eat Pasari?
So we're gonna talk about that now. That's the next point now. What's the reason? If you have a look on the sheet, what's the reason? Do you have machines?
No.
What's the reason why the Chachamim prohibited to have meat after dairy? So two reasons given in the Rishonim. The Rambam says the reason is because the meat may become stuck in the teeth, and because it becomes stuck in the teeth, it takes a few hours to decompose. That's why you can't have them together. That's what Rambam says. The Torah says different reason. Rashi as well. Rashi says the reason is nothing to do with the teeth, got to do with the taste. The taste lingers in the stomach and in your mouth for a certain period of time, and therefore, by not waiting, it's going to be considered as if you're having them together. What's the difference between these two reasons? Number of points I'll give you. Number one, what happens if a person chews meat? He chews. You know, you get this biltong meat. Yeah? You can chew it, but you don't swallow it. Right? According to the Rambam, the problem is you're chewing it, stuck in your, you're gonna have to wait 6 hours. According to the reason that the taste is in your, I didn't actually taste anything, I was just chewing it. There won't be a problem. Secondly, what happens if a person swallows meat? swallows meat without chewing it. If you swallow meat without chewing it, so according to the Rambam, the reason is not applicable anymore. Because it's got to do with your teeth. It's going to be stuck in your teeth. Right? Yeah? You with me? But if the reason is that the taste lingers in your stomach, then you swallowed it. Right? And a third difference, a third nafkamin is going to be false teeth. A person who has false teeth. Right? If you've got false teeth, then... Yeah, exactly. According to the Rambam, you've got no problem. Just change your teeth. You eat your meat. Yeah. Eat your meat. Have two sets of teeth. Eat the meat in the first set, and then take it out. And according to Rambam, no problem. According to Rambam, the whole problem is the meat gets stuck in your teeth. So if you're going to have different teeth, you've got no problem. You have milky meat teeth and meaty teeth, right? But if the reason is that the taste lingers in your stomach, then it's going to be prohibited. Again, we take both opinions, and therefore, in all circumstances, it's prohibited. Meaning, one cannot, if one chews meat without swallowing it, or one swallows meat without chewing it, one still has to wait the period of time necessary. And we don't say that you can learn another opinion. Okay, is that clear? Is that clear? Yeah, any questions on that? Okay, so how long does one need to wait? Okay, so I'm not going to go, I mean, all the people know this, you know, I'm not going to spend too much time on this, but very briefly, just so we should know, there is no opinion, there's no such opinion as 3 hours. There are only two opinions, really. There are only two opinions, really. And that's 6 hours or immediately. And let me explain what I mean. All the Gemara says is that you have to wait mis'udah lis'udah, for meal to meal. The question is, what does meal to meal mean? Is that time span? Or is that practically meal to meal? Rambam says meal to meal is the time normally you wait between meal to meal. And he says the normal time between two meals, yeah, is kamo shesh sha'ot. About 6 hours. That's what Rambam says. Tosfot says it's nothing to do with time. It's you can't have in the same meal meat and then milk. If I had a meal, I said Birkat HaMazon, and I've washed my mouth, I can go immediately and have dairy. That's what Tosfot says. Okay? Now, Shulchan Aruch, we Sfaradim, Maran follows the Rambam as usual, and Maran says 6 hours. The Rama, who sets the halakha for the Ashkenazim, the Rama follows Tosfot. He says, nonetheless, Minhag is to wait an hour.
Who's that, sorry?
The Rama. Ramah. But his main basis, his base is the shita of Tosfot, that meal to meal. As soon as you finish your meal, you can begin the next meal, a dairy one. He says that's the halakha, but it's customary, we wait an hour. And these are the two extremes. And these are the two halakhot, really. You've got 6 hours, which is the Shulchan Aruch, Yosef Cairo, and the Rambam. And then you have the second opinion, which is not really an hour, but it's become an hour. The point is one meal to the next, which is 1 hour in practice. Okay? These are the two opinions. Over time, the opinion of 3 hours evolved. And what this is very difficult to trace the source of this, but it's not older than, it's not very old, this minhag. But what some suggest is that because it came from those who keep 6 hours, in the winter, some opinions hold the 6 hours are time hours. We don't hold that. We hold 6 hours is 6 hours, 6 times 60. But there are those opinions who hold 6 hours means in the summer you're going to end up waiting 9 hours because each hour in the summer is about an hour and a half. Because I'm not going to go into halachic hours. Halachic hours means you divide the day into how many hours there are in the day. So they want to say that the opinion of 3 hours came from the opinion of 6 hours in the winter. Because in the winter, the hours are much shorter. And they reckoned and they reasoned, since 3 hours works in the winter, and the taste no longer is no problem anymore, then it must work in the summer as well. And therefore, it became 3 hours. That's basically what happened. Yeah, that's the justification of this minhag. But, as you can clearly see, those that follow the Ashkenazim, there is what to allow in 1 hour. Again, most Ashkenazim won't tell you that. Most Ashkenazim will tell you they wait 3 or 6 hours. Reason being is because there are those who came after the Ramban, argued and said you should follow the Rambam, and so on and so forth. But there is plenty to allow for Ashkenazim to keep 1 hour. If that's the tradition from their parents or grandparents, that's something else. For us Faradim, we follow the Shulchan Aruch, we follow the Rambam, and therefore one should really wait 6 hours. Now I know many in India, in Iraq, in many places had the minhag to wait 3 hours, and fine, that's fine. But we should know, really, the main halakha for us is in essence 6 hours, and not less. But what's very interesting is the Rambam writes, Kemo Sheshat. Okay? He writes, about 6 hours is the difference from meal to meal, which is why Chacham Obadiah writes, it has to be exactly 6 hours.
In the 6 hours.
Yeah. He says from 5.5 hours onwards, that's considered 6 hours. Right? He says, you know, best to wait 6 hours, but if there's any need, you're eating in someone's house, someone's offered you a tea with milk, or he says, talks about, you know, different places where that's what you got to eat, then after 5.5 hours, he says, that's considered already 6 hours. Because the Rambam doesn't say 6 hours, minute to minute, as people look at the time, you know, exactly 6 hours, right? It's next meal, about 6 hours, 5.5 hours, 6 hours, so on and so forth, okay? Likewise, if one is unsure whether 6 hours have passed or not, one can be lenient. If one thinks, you know, is it been 6 hours, been 5 hours, 5.5 hours, one's not exactly sure how long has passed, but obviously a long time has passed, then one is allowed to be lenient and eat, because this is a doubt with the rabbinic, and therefore there wouldn't be a problem with that. Okay. What happens if one made a bracha on dairy food within 6 hours for us Faradim, or 3 hours, or within one, within the time when you don't normally eat dairy after meat? You made the bracha, you made yourself a tea, a coffee with milk, you made the blessing, and as you finished the blessing you realized, oh no, I'm meaty. So what do? Should you eat or drink or not?
You don't waste blessing.
Why? Why'd you say that? Perhaps, huh? But, well, okay, good. Well, good. But why? What's the?
You're
saying you're eating dairy after meat within the prescribed time.
It's a bracha,
but one is breaking the.
You need to sit here and then.
Excellent. So basically, what we've learned until now is that, as I've said, this is 2 or 3 times removed from the Torah, not eating 1 hour, 3 hours, 6 hours afterwards, right? In comparison to saying God's name in vain, which is from the Torah, therefore that trumps. Therefore that's more important. Same applies, by the way, in the 9 days. Not eating meat in the 9 days. That's only a minhag, right? If you made the bracha, you eat the meat. Similarly, on a fast day even on a fast day. On a fast day, if one made the bracha, and realize it's a fast day, you should take a sip, and then stop eating. However, just say on the side very quickly, this doesn't apply to if a person makes a bracha on something forbidden from the Hachamim, food which is forbidden from the Hachamim. So let's say food which is being cooked by a non-Jew, which we're going to talk about next lecture, which is forbidden to eat. If you made a bracha on that, and that you don't eat, because that's intrinsically forbidden. All the examples I've given you are foods which are intrinsically permissible. So within 3 hours, within 1 hour, it's too early to eat, but the food is itself fine. Or on a fast day, the food is itself fine. Right? So then you made the bracha, sip, eat, drop, and then continue, and then stop. Right? But when the food itself is intrinsically prohibited, even if it's only prohibited because of a rabbinic prohibition, like it's been cooked by a non-Jew, then, in such a case, you can. You shouldn't eat it. You shouldn't eat it. You shouldn't
know how about that. Can you quickly change it? You have something else?
No, that's a different question then. If you had said the bracha on one thing, you didn't have it in mind at all, anything, it's only this, can you change it? It's not simple at all. Unless it's in front of you, Pashtus is, it doesn't chayf make another bracha on it. If you didn't have it in front of you. If you had doubts for this, and specifically. But when you're home and you have, you know, you make shakar on the fridge, then it's on the fridge, whatever's in the fridge, it's fine. But when you've got one thing specifically there, then you go to run and try to find something else, then you have to make another bracha on that.
The bracha levatala are more important than having the meat of...
Definitely.
Hmm?
Definitely.
Bracha levatala.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. Children. What would you say about children? Yes.
You missed the waiting from when.
Ah, good point. Okay, someone's following. Good, good. Waiting from when. So waiting from when is that we hope waiting from when is from the actual time you finished eating meat as opposed to Birkat HaMazon. There are those of the opinion that you have to wait 6 hours from Birkat HaMazon. We say no. Just from the time you actually finish ingesting the meat, from then, put your stopwatch on. And, yeah. Okay. Children. So what would you say about children? You know, we do hinuch, we educate children. So what would you say about children? So this is important to... The?
Under bar mitzvah.
What's permitted? What, to eat together? So, the halacha is for children, one doesn't have to wait 6 hours. One doesn't have to wait 6 hours. One can wait 1 hour. Okay? Because as we've said, that, you know, 3 hours, 6 hours is quite removed a few times, and it's only according to Rabban. For children, we need should try to educate them to wait and to have self-control and self-restraint. But 1 hour is sufficient. You don't need to wait more than that. However, Hamavadiah says, if they just want to have something dairy, which is a luxury, they want to have an ice cream, something like that, something which isn't necessary for their... It's not having a dairy meal, they're not having something like milk, a cup of milk for going to sleep, that's fine, right? But if they're just having something luxurious, like an ice cream, something like that, then that's better to try to teach them a bit longer restraint, more than an hour. Okay? But, as he says, it's up to 1 year before Bar Bat Mitzvah. Girls 11, boys 12. From then on, one should begin really trying to educate for 6 hours, if possible. Not always easy, but one should try to do that. But certainly, for the children, it's certainly fine 1 hour and to have dairy after. No problem at all. Children under 3, you can feed them one to the next, one after the other. Just wipe their mouth and face in between. So you give him a piece of chicken, the baby, and then straight away, just wipe his face, wipe his mouth, make sure nothing inside, and you can give him dairy, no problem at all, one after the other. Good question. So, it's not, the Hachamim forbade it because it looks like it. And therefore they said if you want to cook that together, you have to put like almonds next to it, to show that it's not. Okay, similarly, anyone who's ill, now when I say ill, I don't mean you're in bed. Ill means you got a headache, you know, you got something. It doesn't have to be totally ill. Person who isn't comfortable and feels that having this dairy is going to help him or her, then it's fine to wait 1 hour and to ingest dairy food. Similarly, a nursing woman who needs to have milk. We know nursing women need to have milk. And they don't need to wait 6 hours. They can just wait an hour after having meat to have dairy, or nursing woman. And similarly, a pregnant woman who's craving, she can't wait 6 hours, she wants to have dairy again. Because again, these halachot can only be understood what we've said before. And we explained that all the Gemara says a meal to meal, what does meal to meal mean? Right? And as we've explained, there are those who interpret to mean 1 hour. And therefore, though we follow the 6 hours, but if there's any needs, even if it's a small one, like if someone's slightly ill, he needs to have a coffee with some milk and he feels it's going to make him better, then after 1 hour one can be lenient. However, in such cases when one only waits an hour, one should make sure that he eats something in between, something power in between, and washes his or her mouth.
Is an elderly person considered...
Elderly people are generally considered this status of ill. So someone who, would be the same. You can't wait 6 hours, and you know, there's only something dairy in the house, and to make him wait for 6 hours, and of course, after now, one could be lenient, no problem at all. Okay, tasting without swallowing or chewing doesn't make you meaty, by the way. Doesn't make you meaty. So in Erev Shabbat, there are those who taste the food, taste the hamin or something like that. If you taste and you don't chew, you don't swallow, doesn't make you meaty. You can have after dairy. Yep.
Does that mean you have
without,
to spit it out?
You have to spit it out, of course. Yeah, tasting means without swallowing, without chewing, that means you have to spit it out. Yeah. If you spit out, then that doesn't make you a meat. You can just wash your mouth and continue having dairy. False teeth, you know, don't be surprised. This is discussed extensively in the poskim, whether you need to have separate false teeth or braces. Braces can get a lot of food stuck there. I remember when I used to have braces, I had a lot of food stuck there. Yeah. Nonetheless, heat only transmits if it's yatsuredet bark at a certain temperature. That's not going to happen in the mouth, and therefore there's no need for people to have separate sets of teeth, dentures or braces. It's fine. You can keep one set of false teeth. You don't have to go and buy another one tonight. Okay. Fine. The next point is very important. Very important, the next point. And it's going to do you a big favor in your lives if you listen carefully to this next point. So this is I've seen over and over again people ask this question, and they don't know. They think it's asur. I have a meaty oven. Okay? And I bake halot in this meaty oven, thinking I'm going to have it with the Shabbat meals. So I bake in the meaty oven. I baked the halot now, sitting in my freezer, sitting on the table, and I now want to have a cheese sandwich with these halot. Yeah. Can I have a cheese sandwich or not? No. Why not?
Because it's in the meaty oven.
The oven was clean. So this is called, if you have a look on the sheet, nat bar nat, which means it's abbreviation for noten ta'am, the son of noten ta'am, which means it's twice, the flavor is twice removed. Meaning like this. We're talking about a clean, meaty oven. We're not talking about there's an oven where there's meat inside. An oven which is meaty. An hour ago, a piece of steak was cooked in this oven. Why can you not cook something dairy in the oven? I've cleaned it now. The reason is because the walls absorb the taste. Okay. The walls absorb the taste. The walls have the flavor number one. Okay? So you can't cook something dairy in that meaty oven, because when you cook something dairy in that meaty oven, flavor one comes out and mixes with milk. Okay, so you can't do that. Once, however, I cook something parv in there, that flavor now goes into it, that becomes flavor number two. That's no longer flavor one. Flavor two can be eaten with dairy. Simple as that. Which means, now Ashkenazim don't hold it. Ashkenazim hold only b'di'avad, only post-facto, it's fine. Okay? B'chavad says, even l'chatechila, and that's what Shulchan Aruch says as well, even in the first instance, one can put chalot in the meaty oven in order to eat them together with cheese. No problem at all. In the chatechila, in the first instance. Ben Ishchai is a chumrah only after 24 hours, but the main halacha is like that, is that one may do that. Because the logic is very clear. It's second flavor. Therefore one can do that. And vice versa. If you put something parv in a milky oven, you can then go and eat that parv a thing with something meaty. Right? But, very important, I'm talking about where the oven is clean. If the oven's not clean, if there's proper meat residue in the oven, then the parv thing gets flavor one from the meat itself. Not getting the flavor from the walls. It's getting the flavor from the meat itself. So that's flavor one. That can't be eaten with dairy. If the oven's clean, that's what we're talking about. And in such a case, one can actually cook it in order to go and eat that with something dairy. No problem at all. What does clean mean? There's no visible residue. You don't have to put it on self-clean for 2 hours. No, that's fine. That's clean for Pesach days. Right? We're talking about just nothing on the surface area. No residue. No problem at all to eat it.
Rabbi, if you put that same colour in that oven with the steam on it, but with the... it hasn't been cleaned, then you still have to wait six hours.
You'll have to wait 6 hours. Yeah, that's got tam ki ikar. Tastes exactly ikar, then you're going to have to wait. That's a meaty thing. That's considered meaty itself.
Fine. Shavuot, just going to finish off with a few points, a few minor points. Shavuot, we have a minhag, okay? I'm just going to finish off now with an idea on Shavuot. Shavuot, we have a minhag, we have a custom of eating dairy food on Shavuot. What's the reason for this custom? There are three, by the way, this custom wasn't mentioned before the 13th century. Okay, the minhag of eating dairy on Shavuot. What's the reason for the minhag of eating dairy foods on Shavuot? So one reason given is that when Bnei Yisrael received the Torah at Har Sinai, everything was non-kosher now. The pots were non-kosher because until then they had been cooking meat and dairy together, they had been eating food which wasn't sorted correctly, and therefore they couldn't cook any meat anymore. So they had to end up eating dairy, had to milk the cows and eat, and have something dairy. Why didn't they kasher? Why didn't they do Haggalah, kasher the pots? Right? So then, because we know Matan Torah was given, it was on Shabbat. Okay? Therefore, because it was on a Shabbat, therefore, they didn't do so. Because remember, we know that they left Egypt on a Thursday. Right? 7 weeks later, with Moshe adding on a day, that's Shabbat. We know that was on Shabbat. Anyway, that's one reason given. Another reason given is that Torah is likened, is compared to milk, as we say in Shir HaShirim, Devash v'halav tahad eshonech, honey and milk under your tongue, and talking about the Torah there. And therefore, this is also realized, some people have honey on Shavuot. But a third reason, this is relevant to tonight's shiur, is that on Shavuot, in the temple time, they offered the Shtei HaLechem. The Shtei HaLechem was a special sacrifice on Shavuot of two loaves of bread, because that was the first time they bought from the wheat produce to the Beit HaMikdash. Okay? Before that, Pesach was the barley, now was the wheat. They bought two loaves of bread. That was on Shavuot what they did. Now, in order to remember the sacrifice of the Shtei HaLechem, we have dairy food on Shavuot. What's the connection dairy with two loaves of bread? Very simple, because the halacha is, if you're having a meaty meal and you have challah on the table, that challah, that loaf of bread, cannot be eaten with the other gender. Right? It cannot be eaten unless people have... Today we have a bag around it, so, you know. If you have just a loaf of bread, a loaf of bread on the table, and people having a meaty meal, that cannot then go and be taken if it was cut and it was used part of it. The rest of it cannot be used with a milky meal, and vice versa. Therefore, the minhag, says the Rama, was to have milky food on Shavuot. Why? Because you'll begin having milky food with one piece, one challah, with dairy foods, with cheese, with yogurt. And then, you've had this loaf with dairy. So you now have to go and bring another loaf. And like this, you have the remembrance of the Shtei HaLechem, the two loaves of bread. Yeah, that's what the Rama says. That's the Rama for Ashkenazim. This is the reason But that's the reason for having, one of the reasons having dairy and Shavuot. But you see, this idea is that bread which was on a table and a meat is sodah. So this can happen on a Shabbat. You have challah on the table, the next day you want to go for a picnic, you have, that cannot be used for a picnic if it wasn't guarded and it wasn't clearly set aside and wrapped up during the meal, because it's very likely meat has touched it and therefore it cannot be used. Very, very interesting opinion, extremely interesting opinion, and this is brought down in many books of the Hasidim, the Noam Elimelech and others, that on Shavuot, 6 hours doesn't apply. You can have dairy after meat after 1 hour. Even though the Hasidim keep 6 hours all year round, in order to accommodate this opinion of having dairy food on Shavuot, they say, and this is Budan in many Hasidish Sfarim, one's allowed to have dairy food an hour after having meat. Okay? Noam Elimelech writes this. And a few other Hasidish rabbis used to say this. However, as you know, we don't follow this type of stuff. There's no basis, but just it's an interesting opinion which you should be aware of.
something very interesting. Okay, as you can see, there is a lot more to talk about, but I think I've given you enough to think about. Any questions, I'm happy to take, but I think we've tried to cover at least the main points. Of course, there's so much more. This is what people study for a year in Korah, you know. But this is the basics, as much as we could do. And B'ezrat Hashem, Shavuot next week. Following Shavuot, the next year is going to be on the 18th of June. That's, I think, in 3 weeks from now. Yeah. And then we will be discussing the ins and outs of immersing utensils, Tevilat Kelim. We will be going in and out of talking about all different questions regarding Tevilat Kelim, immersing utensils in the mikveh when you buy them from a non-Jew. So everyone have a Chag Sameach, have a great Chag. Hashem, what we've learned will be guidance for Shavuot with Hashem, and hopefully we'll see you after then. בי חניק השומר לצער הקדוש ברוך הוא, זה פוסט וזה שמר, אדוני חפץ מאוס ולגיד תורה וידיר.